Welcome to Real Fix Reviews, like a book club for people like reading. This month is Pick Anything, so James picked the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Jack Nicholson. And he does movie news. This week we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, Ryan
Hello.
Preston.
And the old guy is here.
So who has the description of this?
So I volunteered to read one of IMDb's wonderful takes on movies.
We call them classics.
Upon admittance. I can't even talk.
Admittance?
Wow, John just showed you.
Yeah, he did.
Upon
he was admitted.
What he said.
When he was admitted to a mental institution, a brash rebel rallies the patients to take on an oppressive head nurse. It's been a long day. I've done two shows already.
All right, so I wanted to point out a couple things for people who may not have been introduced to this film. This has a fantastic cast.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The supporting characters around Jack Nicholson are amazing.
Can I name some of them?
This is Danny DeVito's eighth film. This is Christopher Lloyd's first film.
Wow.
And this is Jack Nicholson's probably his 15th or 20th film.
He was 38 in
Yeah, these guys were kids.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny that in 1975, Christopher Lloyd and Jack Nicholson were both old.
Yeah. Well, they're in their 30s, you know.
Yeah.
And, Christopher Lloyd has been old my entire life.
Yeah.
Yes.
Old, like an old man.
Yeah. And I also want to point out one of my other favorite characters from the older 70s, 80s film, Scat. Man Crothers.
I was actually going to name him.
Yeah, I love that guy.
Always have.
If you guys haven't seen a movie with him, go look up the original Shining with Jack Nicholson and him in it. And then you can watch this one again.
One of my favorite character actors of all time, Brad Dourif.
Yes.
Right.
Who most notably people probably remember as the voice of Chucky from the Chucky movies, Child's Play movies.
And did you have an opportunity to read the credits? I watched the credits, and what was interesting about Brad's credits is it said, everybody went through all, and he was at the very bottom and says, introducing Brad.
First movie and won a Best Supporting Actor Academy Award for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is one of the most versatile actors ever. I mean, he was the worm-tongued dude from Lord of the Rings. He was the crazy doctor guy from Deadwood.
Yep.
Epic characters this guy plays. I mean, just steals the show every time.
And you're also forgetting, don't forget Will Sampson. He played Chief.
Very fitting name.
Yeah.
Although he's only 6'5". Only 6'5".
He's a little guy.
Well, but you got to remember how small everybody else was, other than Christopher Lloyd.
Did you notice his hand size compared to Jack Nicholson's?
Oh, yeah. Jack Nicholson's a little guy.
And Vincent.
Yeah, he's only like 5'8", 10", something like that.
Yeah, I don't even think he's that tall.
And Vincent Chevalier?
I've
never been able to. He's another actor who's been out there. I guarantee if you saw him, I think he was in the movie Payback.
He's been in a lot of movies.
He's been in a ton of movies.
Yeah, this is like a lot of people got a lot of good chops for this film. Now, one of the other things I wanted to point out besides the amazing cast is that the story of this. Now, the actual guy who wrote the book, he won't watch this film because he thinks that they butchered it. They butchered his story. And, you know, I haven't read the story, but the film, I think, is really amazing, and the story was really, really well done. It's one of those that it's one of those that I love this film, but it's not one I can watch yearly. It's probably been like 10 years.
I do want to add something real quick, if it's okay.
Go ahead.
This was the second film to win all 5 major Academy Awards.
Yes.
Best Picture, Actor in Lead Role, Actress in Lead Role, Director, Screenplay. And the other one to do that at the time before that was It Happened One Night in 1934. And if I remember correctly, this is also number 33 in American Film Institute. And I think this also went to the Library of Congress, I think.
Yes, I think so. I want to point out something.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I want to point out something else is Milos Forman. He did some stuff in here that, is a little bit different than most directors. He had I think it was like 10 minutes of extra film footage of Jack Nicholson's reactions just when they were sitting in that group. And most of that, the dialogue was all improv. Mm-hmm. They didn't really tell Jack Nicholson what he was going to be doing until they were like sitting him down to do it.
Which I actually always thought was a good thing, because the way he acts, I've heard stories of him always going, well, you can do this or we can do that. And I've always heard the stories where everything he says just adds a little bit more nuance.
Yeah, but I want to highlight some of Milos Forman's director's things that, you know, he's known for, because I think these are films that are really great as well. You got Amadeus, Man on the Moon, and The People versus Larry Flint.
That's actually
each
crazy.
One of those.
That's a good movie.
Are all really well done films.
Yeah. Now, I want to point out those are his American movies. He's a foreigner, so you have to take, you know, his foreignness with a grain of salt. No, I'm just kidding. He's a
fuzzy foreigner,
a great director, but he's got a different sensibility. And I was reading somewhere that it was partially due to sort of the slightly communist. I think Czech Republic, formerly Czechoslovakia, but sort of coming out of this like propaganda of like really heavy messaged filmmaking from his home country, and so he sort of liked to just sort of see the reactions on people's faces and kind of let that tell the story. And I was actually going to bring up when you said about the book story kind of being butchered. I prefer the medium of movies because I'm such a visual, I mean, that's what grabs my attention is usually the visuals. And there's things, you know, obviously the book is going to be able to explain, but that I'm also going to be able to infer just from images.
Yeah. You
know? So a good director, you know, like Milos Forman, he's actually good at letting those moments kind of sit and letting you watch those subtleties. And you still kind of pick up on the same sort of things that you would if it was being described to you in a book, you know?
No,
I thought it was a great, I never read the book, but I thought it was a great movie.
No, I totally agree with Ryan. Unlike last week's movie, there's more nuances in this. I mean, granted, I also think it's probably a better story, but you're able to give more nuances. At least I thought this director did an amazing job showing stuff without saying it and having characters react on what happened.
Well, according to the trivia on IMDb, the Jack Nicholson's role was offered originally to James Caan. It's also offered to Marlon Brando, Gene Hackman, and Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen,
Burt Reynolds. And Milos wanted Burt Reynolds, so he had a set on Burt Reynolds doing this. And, you know, I gotta say, you know, I think that Nicholson was a better pick for that. Although James Caan and Gene Hackman at that time,
they could have been.
I don't think that it would have been really well with Marlon Brando or Steve McQueen.
I think it would have been a different movie, but it would have still been good.
It would have been a lot smoother. It would have been smoother and not.
That's what I was going to say. It would have been this different kind of cool and the type of charisma that Nicholson has. I mean, the people that you named that they were thinking about, that was all the heavies at the time.
Yeah,
right.
You know, the ones whose presence was going to be really, really large on the screen, because with all these great characters around you, you know, it has to be this big personality. And I think they went with like the biggest personality they could in Jack Nicholson.
Yes.
You know, as opposed to the other ones would have been a little more subtle. Like you said, I think James Caan might have had some more close to the energy, but not the same.
I think I agree. I actually think Nicholson was the perfect because he has that kind of chaotic.
Well, the interesting thing is
around him in all of his movies that he plays. You know, they're all kind of
if you
crazy
look at the movies before this that Nicholson had done, he really hadn't done any of his eccentric acting other than possibly The Last Detail. I mean,
well,
he has Chinatown.
The Fortune, The Tommy, The Passenger, Chinatown, Last Detail.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. Chinatown, he'd already done five easy pieces. Easy Rider was
yes, way Easy Rider. Easy Rider.
I'm not the only one, folks. I know. It's just tonight. It has something to do with tonight.
Sorry, Ryan, you kind of locked up, so you're going to have to repeat what you said. And,
oh, dang.
And Skype. Aaron is down, down. There we go. We're back.
Skype, Aruni.
So you said that you were talking about Chinatown and what was the other one?
He was already known for having kind of a big presence.
You know, I don't see. I'd have to watch Chinatown again. It's been a long time, and I don't like that film, by the way. But I don't see that.
I'm not a big fan of Chinatown either. But it's quite the film.
Well, let's start getting towards more of the story.
Yeah, let's move on to that topic.
Well, one of the things, you know, I'm then letting you guys talk about it, and one of the things, the thoughts that I had when you were talking about some of the other actors that were up for it, one of the reasons why Nicholson was a brilliant choice was because he is so good at both serious acting and comedy.
Yeah.
And he's able to blend the two together. And it was and his ability to put empathy into the character, the way it worked in this movie, like the fishing scene on the boat, and you know, he really cared about these guys.
Yeah.
He, you know, he could have just escaped himself, took off, and never seen any. But
yeah, and that
took
was the
last.
That was the last shot. Was the boat scenes?
Yeah,
and those were pretty cool.
Yeah,
I would say I agree. And the other scene I think that would highlight that is towards the end of the movie, when the guy who started actually talking normal.
Samson.
Is it Samson?
Chief. Is.
No. It was the other guy.
Oh, Bobby.
The stutter.
Yeah.
You know, he started talking normal and fine, and that nurse Ratchet or Cratchit or whatever her name was really started saying, "Well, I'm going to tell your mom." And at the end of the movie, spoiler, you know, when he strangles her, I was like, you know, kill the bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, were almost rooting for him, weren't you?
And I got to point out. Go on, Ryan.
No, I was gonna say it was such an unredeemable character. I mean, it was really. I think I'd read somewhere else that there was a handful of women. I mean, because this was right during the women's liberation movement and all that, middle of the '70s. That a lot of women turned it down because it was such a cold-hearted bitch of a character. You know, they didn't want to play her, and so you know, it's understandable. You know, one would have that reaction to that scene.
Yeah.
Well, Louise Fletcher herself had some difficulties.
So good.
Yeah, she did an incredible job.
Yeah.
I mean, she just was fantastic. But she admitted herself, she was upset when all the boys could laugh and have a good time and everything. She had to stay stone faced, and she actually got upset. She wanted to laugh and have a good time too.
I actually think she's one of the best characters in the movie.
Oh yeah,
it's the two. Of them.
Yeah, did she win an award?
I thought she did.
Oh, I think she had to.
Yeah, give me one second.
What were the five? Supporting actor.
Yeah, actress in lead role.
I was going to point out this too. One of the trivia things I thought was pretty interesting was Louise Fletcher was signed a week before filming began. After auditioning repeatedly over 6 months, director Milos Forman had told her each time that she just wasn't approaching the part correctly, but kept calling her back. So, I mean, like, can you imagine that? You keep on getting called back for this casting thing, and he's like,
"Well, and hey, you can if you want to be an actor, you better get used to that."
But he was pointing at her, saying, you know, you're right for this character. You just need to do it right. I mean, that's what I infer with the 6 months of calling her back.
Seems pretty normal. And
I would
sort of portray this evil quality without actually knowing that she was being evil, you know, while thinking that she's helping while not actually helping.
Yeah. Well, I would say, see if I'm getting what Ryan said right, is everybody else knew she was evil, but she legitimately thought she was helping.
Yeah, she thought she was doing good. Yeah.
Boy, I don't know if I agree with that. I think, because if you go back to the scene where they were all the doctors, and she was in the background, and they were talking about this guy, and they were saying, no, I don't think he's really crazy, and I think we should send him back there. And she stood back there and says, no, I think he really is, and I think we can help him. There was a glimpse of an evilness.
Yeah.
And her
yeah,
at that
but,
point, where it was like, I'm gonna get this guy.
But that brings me up to one of my favorite scenes, although I won't bring this up.
Because he pulled a Joel Kennedy.
But when he's...
What?
He lobotomized him.
I know. That's the ending. But that my point was, it seemed to me as that she was out to mess with him from that time on. That was her walk in life. I'm going to mess with this guy.
Well, if you watch the scene, and I think it's one of the most pinnacle scenes of seeing how great of actors were surrounding Jack Nicholson is when they're in the circle and he finds out that he's there until they say he's okay to leave.
Right.
When he confronts everybody there,
his attitude
and
changed.
And if you watch her, Louise Fletcher played a fantastic role of trying to keep that stone cold face, but showing enjoyment in him writhing over this. Because you just watch her, and she doesn't really say anything, but you can see it on her face and in her body movements. It's like amazing.
It's this kind of interesting dynamic. What I love about this, Abby, this is why book adaptations to movies are usually pretty good, is because they're at the core of it, there's usually a really good story. Here's this sort of anti-hero that comes into this lady's world, who she thinks she's the hero of this world. And then here's this person who, like IMDb says, rallies the troops sort of against her and kind of starts getting him on his side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this like counterintuitive to things that she knows. Like, wait a second, I'm helping these people. Who's this asshole think he is? So that moment was almost her like, I got you. You know what I mean? Like, you are here until I say that you're to leave, and you just give me a reason not to let you go.
I want to say two things. One, to get the Kennedy thing, Joe Kennedy had one of his daughters lobotomized. And the second one is, I love the fact in the beginning of this movie, his whole point was to screw with everybody.
Yeah.
Even after, I think they said, you're never going to leave, his goal was to screw with everybody until I think that guy had that one thing at the end with that guy.
When Bobby killed himself, maybe a little bit before. Yeah, Billy.
But I thought that's when he changed, because I think he started seeing redeeming qualities in these people, and I think he started seeing these people can be redeemed. And when that happened, I think that's when he said he knew. I think that she was evil. Was kind of
at the same time he's starting to see these redeemable qualities in everybody else and kind of starting to sort of humanize them, whereas the it seems like the larger message of this institution was like, this is just a place to warehouse, you know, crazy people.
Yeah,
as they called it back in the day. Obviously in this day it's a little more complicated, but I think as we're seeing that dynamic change, we're also seeing more and more legitimate reasons that he's actually there for a good reason. Yeah. You know, that he actually does have some pretty serious mental disorders.
I was actually reading, as I was doing some research about this movie, this is the doctor saying that this movie had did horrible things for ECT, electrical consultants.
And rightfully so.
And my favorite
still comment, going on today, folks.
My favorite comment was, people don't writhe in pain like that because they're unconscious. I was like, how is that better?
Yeah,
I'm gonna go first in rating this. I unfortunately didn't have kind of enough time to digest this movie like I should have, but I definitely will have to say I give this movie a 5 out of 5.
Really?
I'm gonna have to rewatch this and actually not kind of fast forward a little bit as I did, because I just didn't have the time.
No, I get it. It's a little over 2 hours.
Yeah, I really loved Jack Nicholson's character. I love the fact that every role I really love him in. He's has this ability to piss people off and be cool while doing it. I mean, it's pretty neat. So it's a strong 5 out of 5 for me. And Ryan.
I think even with sort of the change in the way we pace movies nowadays, I think that might be the only way that it suffers. But it's such a good use of that space that it's who gives a shit? It's such a great movie. You know, you kind of look forward to scene after scene, and then you're just watching a masterclass on acting from everybody. So that's 5 out of 5.
There's no white noise. There's nothing in this movie that would be like throwaway scene. I thought everything added to a character or to a moment or to the next scene. That's something you don't see a lot of. I think even
and
then.
It's something you can infer little things from characters. I mean, you know, even if the that deep of content wasn't intentional, it's those subtleties are there if you're looking for.
Yeah. So, Rob.
Man, I like this movie. I remember, you know, I had the opportunity to see it in the movies when it came out. Unfortunately, you guys weren't around yet.
He's not called the old guy for nothing.
That's right. And man, I'll tell you what, even then it made quite the effect, I think, on all of us that saw it. The actors were superb. Nicholson, of course, was really, really the guy at that time. And it's hard to beat this movie. The feel of the institution, the white uniforms, the whole way everybody was treated. And I mean, I think they got the flavor of institutions at that period of time, what they looked like. I think it was spot on. The acting, I give the guy a lot of props on this. I thought he did a great job with it. The editing was excellent as well. So for me, it's a 5 out of 5.
And yes.
I would like to add, the other reason I think this movie does so well is, as time goes on, I think the character of a mental institution like this keeps getting darker. So I think as time goes on, this movie gets richer because of what your mind thinks of those institutions.
Yeah. You know, this, I want to
make, we got Ryan.
I want to bring up, yeah, you did
we got
Ryan.
His voice, although he's back.
There we go.
You know, I highlighted one of the scenes that I think is one of the most well-acted ones, the one where he finds out and he confronts them on that. But the other one that I think is a big one that, people watching pay attention to that scene. And this other scene that I want to mention is when they're sitting on the bench and it's him and the chief, Samson, and he hears him talk.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like time. No,
yes.
There's no
juicy fruit.
Yeah, yeah. He does, just that, and you got to watch all the scenes building up to it to really understand how great of a job the acting was done right there.
There is something I actually agree with. The guy who wrote the book said in the book, Chief was the narrator. And I was thinking about that would have been the one thing
the
I think in this movie would have made it richer.
Yeah, because he's the one that got out.
Yeah, no, I know.
Because if you don't know it at first and at the end, that little tidbit, I think they'd be like,
through his eyes.
I think that would be amazing.
So I want to also mention the writer of this, the novel guy, Ken Kesey. Dude, before you die, watch the film.
Yeah, please. Seriously. Because I was disappointed. Apparently, He's never seen the film, does not support it, apparently sued the producers after the production that they butchered his script. And apparently one night, according to legend, he skips through channels and comes across some movie that looks interesting and then gets semi through it and realizes it's his movie and then changes the channel.
Yeah, so he didn't finish it.
Get over your bad self, dude, and watch the movie, all right?
With that being said, we're going to have to move on to the House of Cards episode.
It's a 5 for me.
Five? Well, oh my God, we all agree?
So we're going to have to switch off to the House of Cards, and unfortunately, I ran out of time this week to see it. So
I'll tell you what. I'll take James's whack at this one this time,
because you
know it doesn't have to only be James. Let me tell you something. Chapter eight. All chapter eight is good for is the lead into chapter nine, and because really, on its own, you don't get it.
It's all him being a hissy fit for not getting his way.
Yeah, it really is, and I can see a politician doing that. But as far as a show goes. And a chapter in here, that's all it is. I had to watch, you know, 10 to see the progression to understand why the heck 9 was as bad as it was in my point. And that's the way I just thought, you know, 9, you could skip 9, go to 10.
So you watched 10 basically thinking to yourself, they better pay this shit off.
They better, exactly. I just wasted all this time paying attention to this thing. You know, you damn well better pay off at some point. And so,
well,
10, and only we'll get to 10 next week. But
well, with that being said, stay tuned to next week to see if it actually pays off or did Rob waste his ever loving time.
Yeah.
And don't forget, we do have a Facebook page. Do you love us, hate us? Do you think you suck? We'll read you on air, maybe. Also, don't forget to pause for the cause and help keep Old Guy Tech TV on the air.
Not that anybody has.
So
it's the
James
old guy
Stern
keeping Old Guy Tech on the air.
So
why do you think he has gray hair?
Yeah.
So we've been talking about Marvel putting out shows to lead up into their upcoming movies. Now DC's jumping on board now with Supergirl.
Yeah.
And it kind of seems like if it's a Smallville thing, are you guys even going to waste your time with this? Supergirl.
I love superhero stuff. I don't even know where the hell to draw the line anymore. I'm being fucking flooded with this stuff.
Right?
Now. She'll never look like Wonder Woman, so I don't care about Supergirl.
Well, they're doing Wonder Woman too.
I know they are. Wonder Woman, I can almost understand. Supergirl, she was a paragraph in the whole Super Stories.
She really was.
About crypto.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know.
Yeah, but she's not going to look like Helen Slater in the '80s.
No, she won't. But you know, I might check it out. I can't say I will. I really probably won't.
So I certainly wouldn't.
I have a question.
Maybe I will.
I'm interested because I always liked the Supergirl's character. I liked her better than Superman because she was a little bit more ruthless.
I do have
She was a teenager and didn't know how to hang on to emotions.
Yeah, that's why I liked it.
I do have a question.
Superman with angst.
I have a crush on you. I will crush you.
I do have a question.
Burn you in the eyes.
Does anybody, was there ever a Supergirl cartoon or a TV show or anything besides this in the past? Because doing a quick internet search, I don't think there has.
There was a Supergirl movie.
Well, besides that, oh yeah, you're right. With Helen Slater
in the '90s.
Repeat that. Yeah. I'm sorry, I was talking over to you.
So she was a character in the Superman '90s cartoon that was sort of circa the Batman animated series.
Yes, but she didn't have her own show.
Yeah, there was
no. She didn't even have.
She was a paragraph in the whole Super Story.
So besides the 1980s movie with Helen Slater, this is really the first.
Yes, first step out of Supergirl.
See, this
could go well.
This could be cool. This could be time you can create a new mythos of a character who has, as Rob said, about a paragraph in the story.
Like in Kryptonite.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, does anybody really start getting into Supergirl when it comes to canon? It's like, I mean, what a throwaway character that nobody gives a shit about.
Exactly.
Like Ant-Man.
Yeah, whatever you
like
want. Ant-Man. I mean, it could be awesome for all I know, but.
Well, I've heard, I've read some stuff. The reason why some people are excited is because you finally get another, you know, girl power character, you know.
Which is great, you know, that's
Is it going to be aimed at teenagers? Is this to help teenagers?
It's probably going to be a teeny bopper like Smallville.
Okay, so then, all right. If it's going to help girls, young teenagers, fine.
All right.
Put it out just for that.
Yeah. One of the other things I was going to point out was, have you guys ever watched The Strain?
The Strain?
What?
The Strain.
Strain.
No.
Yes.
Ryan, you need to watch The Strain. This is a new take on...
Del Toro show.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good.
Okay. Yeah, no, I haven't seen it, but
I've
heard mixed reviews.
It's amazing. Oh, like, yeah. I'm so still waiting with bated breath for season two.
So it's
Corey. Paula won't watch it with me. Just to let you know, it is intense.
Now, I want to point this out. I want to point this out.
Okay.
Now, I had three guys that I know where we were all watching it, and each one of our wives quit watching it on the exact same episode. When they were in the hospital? Is that when Paula quit?
Yeah. She just pretty much, just after the first opening scenes, knew what was happening. She went, that's it. I'm out of here. It's one of your own.
Amazing.
Yeah, amazing. You guys should watch it.
I want to add one thing. Here's the actual plot, or at least synopsis according to IMDb, so mileage may vary.
Go ahead.
A thriller that tells the story of Dr. Ephraim Goodweather, hell of a name, the head of the Center for Disease Control and Canary Team in New York. He and his team are called to investigate a mysterious viral outbreak with hallmarks of an ancient evil strain of vampirism.
It's a very amazing adaptation of the vampire legend. But the interesting thing is that UC Irvine is offering a 4-week course called Fight or Die, the science behind FX's The Strain.
Yeah.
They have started a course based on the virus theme of what this is, and they're offering a course on the theoretical and practical understanding of parasites, cyber attacks, and disease dynamics.
Well, I would take that class.
Wow. On this,
is that awesome or what?
Samwise Gamgee is in the show.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a great picture of Ryan. Anyway, we just stumped him.
One of the neat things about many schools, and I took a, even UCLA offers, a lot of times there are courses that are offered on books, or on movies, and you know, some people look at it like, what, you're really do a class? Believe it or not, it's pretty cool. I mean, you get to really, you know, get into the nuances of everything, every detail. Yeah.
So this show has an interesting cast. Cool. Now, is this on an Alphabet channel? What's it on?
NBC, I think.
NBC?
I thought it was on...
Did you say this was at Irvine?
Yes, UC Irvine.
Holy shit, I'm like 40 minutes from Irvine.
You gotta go look up the class, man.
Seriously.
Isn't that really cool, though, that they took...
I thought it was...
...the theory and the practical things of this, and they put it together. I think it's a Fox.
Sucks. Well, it's Fox. A couple of years ago, when the whole zombie craze, everything was zombies for a while, the CDC had this, or not the CDC, the government had said something like, oh yeah, we have like a zombie apocalypse plan, and it really was basically like a title for this like war game exercise thing that they do, because you can't have like a war game exercise saying, hey, this is what we do if China, you know, like you can't just use throw around.
Not letting out the secrets, right?
So it's like this code name thing that they had that sort of would resemble like some kind of an outbreak, but they were using it as like this practical application of something similar.
Yeah. Okay. So it was a dry run.
So any other news jumps?
Yeah, I got one more little piece. I figured out.
It's FX. You're right.
Oh, FX. Sorry.
See, I knew it was.
But yeah. Anyway, one of the things, since I started with DC, and I mentioned that Marvel and DC, you guys should have known, I'm ending with Marvel because I'm more of a Marvel fan than DC, but shut your hole. Anyway, there's going to be an X-Men spinoff called The New Mutants.
Is this going to be off any sort of canon or just kind of see what happens?
New Mutants.
They haven't really said anything. Now, I haven't heard of this. Yeah, it seems like it's going to be live action. This show called The Fault in Our Stars. Have you guys heard of this thing? I haven't heard of this. The Fault in Our Stars. It's Fox, and they signed the director of this to direct the X-Men spinoff, The New Mutants. And it sounds like it's going to be a Fox thing. I'm not too sure, but that's what it says. And they're trying to cash in on the millions of dollars being thrown at X-Men Days of Future Past and the Deadpool and all these things. So I haven't heard of this show. I don't know about this guy.
So this is supposed to be a TV?
But I found on the description of The Fault in Our Stars, two teens both have different cancer conditions fall in love after meeting at a cancer support group. It's like, huh? So is this going to be the Marvel
love story? I don't know.
Because this kind of sounds like it's going to be horrible.
And fast.
Right?
A Saturday afternoon special.
What I've always said about Hollywood, there's no innovation going on. It's the regurgitation of basically the same thing.
Well, you know what? It was actually
Do we have to teeny bop everything?
And it sounds like it's a special right after Schoolhouse Rocks.
Right?
Yeah.
Sorry, Ryan.
Oh, Ryan ended right at 3 points there. Good luck there, Ryan.
10, 9,
wait, hold on. What you saying, Ryan?
6, 5, 4. Three,
two,
the
Schoolhouse Rock.
Bad. 10-second count.
So
we're laughing at you, Ryan. It took 10 seconds to get you back.
So next week is Ryan's pick. So, Ryan, you're up.
Make all right. Took me a while to figure out what the hell I wanted to do. But I actually had to scroll through the ones that we did in the past to make sure we didn't do this already, and I can't believe I wouldn't bring it up. So I finally get to do this. It's been on my list for a while. Brother Where Art Thou.
Brother Where Art Thou. Okay.
Or Brother Where Art Thou.
For those who didn't catch what Ryan said. Okay, well.
One of Clooney's better movies, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a few.
He's got a few.
And so next week is also episode 10 of House of Cards. So we get to see if what the old guy said happens, or did he waste his time?
If you got through 9, you got to watch 10 because you can't figure out 9.
And I gave One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest a 5 out of 5. James gave it a 5 out of 5. Ryan gave it a 5 out of 5. Rob gave it a 5 out of 5. And holy shit, we all agreed on something. I knew it wasn't going to be the movie I picked last week.
Yeah.
Actually, 3 of us agreed.
Yeah.
I like that movie, man. So, ladies and gentlemen, as always, thank you for watching.
Bye.